Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors, powered by Markentum. If you enjoy listening to Bridge the Gap, we have a special offer for you. Josh and Lucas will be recording live from Interface Seniors Housing Northeast in Philadelphia on November 13th. Podcast listeners are invited to use promo code BTG and receive 15% off. Don't miss this opportunity to learn, network, and see firsthand a recording of the Senior Living Podcast. You're listening to part two of a two-part series with Gene Mikesh.
One of my favorite topics, which is design. And so this is a great parlay into personality-centered care, is that you have used a lot of elements in your education background, in your experiences and your learning experiences, to add into the actual design of the building to impact people's behaviors and their personality and their cognition. So talk us a little bit about your approach to design, and maybe talk about the building that we're in right now.
When I started designing in 2004, my first design was purely based on what I thought was good for my clients. I researched a lot. I read a lot of books, both locally and also from overseas. And I tried to put something together. As I started engaging with them and getting more and more involved, I felt that there's much more to designing spaces for the elderly clients. Every elderly client that I have in my building, they come from different walks of life. There's always something very unique about every single one of them. They bring their experiences, their wisdom, their knowledge, and I feel that many times they're trying to teach us. They're trying to teach us. I was just talking to a young lady behind me a few minutes ago, and she was telling me, you know, she just moved in. She's been here for 3 days. And she said, gosh, how come I didn't know about this place? I would have bought stocks, things like that brings joy to you, because you just feel like you actually have created something for someone else's good. One of the things I realized was there's so much I need to learn. I need to stop talking. I need to stop reading. But rather, I had 29 clients at the time in 2004, and I've got 29 brains that can teach me how to care for them, how to create a space. And listening to them has been very, very helpful. One of the things I want to talk about is the virtual sky ceiling. Virtual sky ceiling is something I didn't come up with that. I had a client, Walter, amazing gentleman. What a sweetheart. Very successful. Owned a couple of malls and some vineyards. And when he came to us, he was functional. He was able to do a lot of stuff on his own. He was able to come and go as he pleased. But a year or two later, I don't know exactly the time frame, around 7 p.m., he would walk down the corridor asking for breakfast. 7 p.m., he just had his lunch, dinner, 2 hours ago. And he said he's hungry, and the first few days we were able to redirect him, but later on it became a dysfunctional behavior. You know, when we started, telling him it's not dinner time. I mean, again, this is like 06, 07. And finally, that's when I realized, like the way I realized with Norma, that I need to dive into his world. But I didn't know much about retrogenesis at the time, nor I understood the personality-centric type of care. I said, well, what if I change the environment around Walter? Will the environment dictate our presentation, our attitude, our approach, our perspective? Is there a way I could simulate an environment where I can have the sun rise and sunset? So visually, when Walter comes out, he looks out up and he looks at the sky ceiling, and it's dark. And he knows, well, it's dark. Maybe it's not breakfast time. Maybe I need to go back into my room. And that need, the need for me to meet Walter's need, was a motivation, inspired me to look for solutions to make it fun and exciting for Walter. Now, after we installed the sky ceiling for the first time in 2011, I've heard my caregivers have shared many experiences where they have said that clients would wake up in the middle of the night, they would come out, and they would see they see darkness, and they would go back and go to bed. So little things, I think, if what has helped me is my ability, me being open to listening to my clients' needs and their desires.
So one of the things that stands out most as we look down this amazing hallway here are the front doors and the patios. So talk to us a little bit about your inspiration there.
Again, this goes back to, now I know the theory of retrogenesis. So I know that as they progress through the stages of the disease, they are going to be reverting back. So they're going back in time. And if it's, I just felt that maybe, and I wasn't sure, maybe if I create a space that they can relate to, move away from, you know, spaces looking like a hotel or an institution or a facility, what if can create a space that they can relate to? Maybe they're in 1930s, maybe they're in 1940s, maybe 1920s. So that was a huge factor that kind of, you know, propelled me to think. And again, it was a chance that I was taking because I didn't know much then. I said, you know what, I'm going to try this out. The worst case scenario, it's not going to work. If it doesn't work, maybe I'll tear it down and I'll repaint the whole place. But it started working. They were able to relate to their environment, their space. And essentially what happened was now they're not questioning the space that they are in. They don't want to go home. You know, our elopements have, I want to say maybe it's less than 1% in all our buildings. I feel that space does matter. Space does shape our attitude, our approach, and how we engage with the environment.
So one of the interesting things, you kind of tricked us a little bit. And when we first came in the community, you said, you know, I'm not going to tell you about all the design features. I want you to tell me what you feel about it when we finish the tour. And I think we gave you some terms like, oh, it was soothing, you know, it was relaxing, and we felt at home, you know, things like that. But then you kind of revealed to us your thought process and some of the design features and how you arrived at your colors, how you arrived at your flooring, and just some of our YouTube subscribers may see this beautiful water feature behind us, and there's several of those around the community. So talk to us about some of the very intentional features of the design and kind of the why behind that.
When I started designing the space, again, you know, they were driven by my client needs. I read something about biophilic space. And I started doing a lot of research, trying to understand what is biophilia, what is biophilic space. And I came across an article, and I don't know the source at this time. I don't remember it. The federal government actually had done had spent a lot of money researching nature and elderly care. And what the conclusion was that the clients, the elderly, like to be part of nature. They want to be with nature. They want to be in nature. They want to have access to nature. The problem is they never made the effort to access nature. Is they were afraid that they would fall, the obstacles, the barriers. So that's what the study revealed. They spent about, $1.5 or $2 million, you know, understanding that the need of nature. So I said, well, if that's the case, you know, nature has a lot of therapeutic benefits. If my clients are fearful and afraid of accessing nature, why not I bring nature to them? Mm-hmm. And so that's how the plants and the waterfalls and the carpets looking like grass, all of those ideas stemmed from. Then, as I'm studying more and researching, I realized that water is H2O, two molecules of hydrogen, one molecule of oxygen. So when it falls, it splits, and you know there's positive ions and negative ions. And with when the water splits, there's more negative ions. Negative ions is good. You know, it helps with seasonal affective disorders. It helps with anxiety. It helps with depression. It really helps in helps one to relax. I said, you know what? Maybe we should try the water feature and see how it is. And when I started talking about the water feature, I got a lot of pushback from my designers, from my architects, and also from my peers saying that, Gene, that's going to remind them of wanting to use the bathroom. And well, I said, well, we'll take the risk. If that's the case, then we can always tear it down. So we installed one water feature, and that seemed to help. And we started, you know, installing it, you know, throughout the building. Then when it came to plants give out oxygen. See, you and I, we need oxygen.
Right.
You know, when you're in a closed space, you are constantly circulating air, like being in an airplane. How about getting some fresh, you know, maybe depend on the plant. So they take in carbon dioxide, they give out oxygen. So that's how the whole plant thing came about. Now, for me to keep the plant alive, I need sunlight. So I need to bring sunlight in. Mm-hmm. Now, but at the same time, I also realize the therapeutic benefits of sunlight. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of studies that shows, you know, between sunlight and natural light, sunlight, and Alzheimer's. And I said, my gosh, why don't we create a space where we bring the natural sunlight in? So essentially, in a nutshell, you know, the objective was to bring the nature to them, because, you know, the study demonstrated that they like nature, but they're unable to access nature.
Well, fascinating, because we've touched a little bit on the program, the clinical side, being very intentional. We've obviously experienced and we've talked a little bit about the intentionality that has gone into the design of this place. Something else you were very intentional with speaking with us about is your belief in reducing psychotropic drugs. So how is your team here very intentional at combining this environment that you've created, this space, with the programming to intentionally reduce the use of psychotropic drugs, and share with us some of the outcomes, because I was fascinated to hear that. That's a wonderful story.
One of the things I realized, well, I have three kids. Now, with children, the children are also teaching you on a daily basis, because I don't think there's a handbook there. This is how which tells you, okay, this is how you got to do these things to be a good father or a great father. So they're teaching you, and we're learning, we're adapting, and trying to be a good parent as much as we can. Now, one of the things I realized with, you know, I was watching my youngest son, Noah, and one day he was just crabby. He was not in a good mood. You know, he was saying stuff, doing stuff, and I'm like, why is he doing this? And the more I started, really investigating, there was a trigger. And then I started looking at children. Then I started looking at my elderly clients. Then I started looking at, you know, people like you and I, my staff, my peers. And I realized that we behave a certain way, and that behavior, when we demonstrate or present that behavior, there's always a trigger. The trigger is either intrinsic, which is within ourselves, inside our body, or extrinsic, which impacts or which influences the way we present ourselves. So there are two factors, intrinsic factor and extrinsic factor. So I started studying that, and I started looking at my clients. And I said, well, my client is anxious today, or he or she is trying to, they're pacing back and forth. They want to leave the building. They're trying to go through the door, or they're yelling and screaming. There has to be a trigger. There has to be a trigger. You know, intrinsic is sometimes it can be, you know, you're hungry, there's pain, you're dehydrated, there could be infection, there could be hormonal changes, you know, all of those things. Extrinsic is from the environment, from the outside, the smell, the noise, something that they see, they, you know, something they say reminds them of something that's undesirable. So every behavior has a trigger. So we call the behaviors dysfunctional expressions. It's a form of expression, you know, but it's dysfunctional. It's not a functional expression. So what we did as an organization is, okay, we got to develop a protocol, and this is what we're going to do. When a client, individual, whether they have dementia, whether they don't have dementia, doesn't matter. When they present with a certain behavior, we have 30 to 60 minutes to identify the trigger. It's very important, because if we are not able to identify the trigger, we will never be able to know what the cause is, and we will never be able to address the problem. So the nursing staff, the caregivers, have 30 to 60 minutes to identify the trigger. If they're not able to identify the trigger, that's when we reach out to the doctor and see if we could get some kind of pharmaceutical support. Now, once we get the pharmaceutical support, we know that, there are a lot of studies coming out stating that psychotropic drugs do more harm than any good. So as a provider, the right thing to do is find a way to wean them off. You know, it may not be possible to wean the entire drug. Maybe, you know, drop the dosage. Slowly wean the drugs off. But the thing is, if we don't know what the trigger is, as soon as we wean the drugs off, and if the trigger presents itself, the client is going to manifest that behavior again. So that is our process. Now, the behaviors can also be controlled externally. The aromatherapy that we do, the music that we play, and the colors that we use, the space configurations that we use, all of this do dictate and influence one's presentation. So I just felt that, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing from a treatment standpoint. You know, we've been caring for our clients for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that, you know, we've done a fantastic job. But if that 9% number is true, there's a very good chance that I may have the disease. And if I have the disease, I don't want to be cared for. I want to be functional. I want treatment for it. And, you know, either I can sit back and wait for others to develop it, or I can do it now.
Sure.
And if I make the effort of doing it now, I could bless a lot of people right now. So, you know, that was my motivation. I started looking Alzheimer care and dementia care from a treatment standpoint rather than from a caring standpoint. We do provide care, but in addition, we started looking, you know, how can we treat a client? How can we treat the disease? When I say treatment, I'm not talking about cure. There's a difference between treatment and cure.
Sure.
Sometimes it gets mixed up. Treatment is managing the disease process through rehabilitation and also using pharmaceutical support. Now, I'll give an example. We had a client a couple of years ago. He came to us, and honestly, at that time, I did not know anything about FTD, frontal temporal dementia.
Okay.
And I didn't even pretend to know that I know. I knew a little bit about Alzheimer's, but not about FTD. So when this client came to us, and when I saw what he manifested, his presentation, I realized that he looked very similar to a child with autism. And I said to myself, well, there should be a treatment protocol already. And what if I use the treatment protocol to address the client's needs? And we did. And it was amazing. I mean, this was a very, very, I don't want to use the word difficult or challenging, but this client has had his own needs. You know, when he came to us, he was very aggressive. He had eloped a couple of times from other facilities, and many facilities refused to take him back. Even hospitals refused to admit him back.
Wow.
And he was pretty aggressive. Within 2 weeks, we were able to help him, and no more he was an elopement risk. He was able to go out, live his life. And that's when I felt that there's so much we can do for these for our clients. One of the things I would ask the audience, encourage the audience to do, is when they look at someone with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, look at the symptoms. We as caregivers and care providers, we already have seen those symptoms. You know, we've seen those symptoms, you know, with other neurological conditions. And there are treatments to address those neurological those symptoms. It may not be a bad idea to start applying those treatment methodologies. You know, I think many times we get blinded by, okay, it's Alzheimer's, or it is vascular dementia, or it is Parkinsonian type. You know, talking about vascular dementia, actually when you look at vascular dementia and its pathology and it looks at how it manifests, it is very similar to stroke. See, we've been rehabilitating people with stroke and sending them back home. In theory, we could do the same thing with vascular dementia. We could. So I think it's important for us to really start thinking outside the box and be creative and really challenge ourselves. You know, the thing is, we got to do something today. If we don't, you know, I don't know what will happen. And it is so important that we do something today. So my encouragement is to, when you look at the dementia, look at the symptoms, look at the manifestation, and there are all kind of treatments for all those symptoms. And we truly can help our clients.
Well, and as our listeners may hear, this is a living, breathing community that we're sitting in, and there's, you know, there's actually things happening here. And I think, you know, I, for one, I'm ready to move in because I feel calm, I feel collected, and I feel serene. And so, Gene, we would love to know, tell our listeners, what's the next phase? Where are you going? Where's your thought process going? Is it to execute and continue on the path that you're on? Or what do you think is the next phase for Lantern Group?
What we would like to see happen is, one of the things I've realized is that the services that we have in the primary markets and some in the secondary markets, many of our clients or many of our consumers are not able to afford our services. And given the information that we know, it's only 9% that has absolutely no risk. We got to help people. We got to help these people. Our services have to be made affordable. How do we go about doing that? And I think that's the next million-dollar question that we ask ourselves. So we are trying to design spaces. You know, one thing that we're working on is called the blue zone design. But I can't use the word blue zone because it's copyrighted. But a design where activities, exercises, socialization is automated through design. And I think when we are able to create spaces that are efficient, you know, we're able to bring the cost of construction down. I think that's a major cost for us, as you all know. And second is labor. If there's a way I could find a way to manage those two costs, I think I may be able to create a space that many of our consumers can afford. I just bought a high school. One of the things I would like to do with the high school is to actually create a space similar to this. It's a challenge. You know, I'm challenging myself if I can create a similar space in that high school. And it's an old building. I was able to get it for a very good price. And without spending a lot of money, am I able to do it? And I think that's our next biggest challenge.
So you remind me of someone that's putting into action wise words that my dad used to say to me, is get comfortable being uncomfortable, right? And you're definitely a pioneer in the industry, an influencer. Love that you're taking time to spend with us so that we have this platform we can share with others that want insight to be able to influence the industry, to shake things up and change things. So really appreciate the time that you've spent with me and Lucas on our podcast.
Yeah. Well, and so, Gene, as we close out, let's maybe specifically talk to the person out there that might be listening, that for whatever reason, maybe they're working someplace and they don't feel like they have the right resources, or maybe they lack the training that they need, but there's something burning inside them that
listening to you speak resonates with them, and maybe you were at that moment in your life too, what can you tell them to give them some encouragement to chase their dreams and chase their goals if they really do have a burning passion to go down a path of really disrupting or being a big influencer in the space for caregiving?
When I was presenting a couple of months ago, I was introduced as a very provocative speaker. And I don't know if that was a compliment or, but I took that as a compliment, and I like to be provocative. And it's one of the things I would encourage. I always say this, you know, what you're great at. People always ask me, Gene, what am I good at? What am I great at? I always say anything that you do that brings joy to you with you not expecting any type of reward, that's what you're great at. That's a very unique talent that God has blessed you with. Mm. It's like our DNA. You know, every single one of us have a very unique talent. And when we exercise that talent, when we get involved and engage with that unique talent, we are great at it. So if there are folks that have the burning passion, I said, take the risk. What's the worst thing that can happen? You'll fail. But you know what? Failure makes us strong. And I always tell this to my my kids when we get on the roller coaster ride. They say, Daddy, we don't want to get in. We don't want to get in. And maybe I shouldn't even say this, but I, you know, people are going to think I'm a very poor father or a dad. I said, the worst thing that can happen is, you know, it's going to stop and we'll be up in the mid-air. That's the worst thing that can happen. But the chance of that happening is very less. This is my thing. I always expect for the worst and prepare for the best. And I always say, if you have that burning passion, go do it. The worst thing that can happen is you'll fail.
That's awesome.
Amen. Well, Gene, we just can't thank you enough. Josh and me and our staff here with Sarah, you've shown us an amazing day, and we're grateful for your hospitality and your level of expertise, and we're rooting for you. And I'm really glad that our listeners are going to be able to hear your heart behind what you do. And so we'll connect with Gene in our show notes so that other people can ask you questions. Gene is back active now on social media, and you'll continue to see Gene. He's a very sought after speaker, and many of the major journalism outlets are wanting your attention and your time. And so a lot of people will be able to follow along. So thank you so much for another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much.
That was part two of a two-part series with Gene Mikesh. Meet Josh and Lucas at Interface Seniors Housing Northeast in Philadelphia on November 13th. Use promo code BTG at registration and receive 15% off. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.